Hello, my name is Greg Donaldson. I'm the branch president for Branch 88 in Galesburg, Illinois. For the last couple of years, I've been doing both formal A and informal A off and on again, and I find myself in unique positions to help people, whether as a steward or in teaching what little bits I understand of the contract. In this case, I am in the unique position, one of about 200 people, I think, who were in Washington, D.C. for branch officer training from April 21st through April 25th. At this branch officer training, at the end of it on the 25th, Executive Vice President Barner gave us a contract update. Now, I am not going to be giving you my opinion one way or the other. I am just going to try and focus on the facts of what was told to us and let you form your own opinions on this. If you're interested in what my opinions are, you can find me on the A to Arbitration Discord. Being said, opinions, much like other things everyone else have, are worth about what you'd find in a toilet on any given day. So, take what you're hearing and educate yourself as best you can. To begin with, there is the opening bargaining resolution. Executive Vice President Barner did not call it out as such. However, he did comment about how there was a movement for transparency in bargaining. His concern with being more transparent and upfront in bargaining are the mailer's political action committees, influencing Congress and forcing Congress to put pressure on the Postmaster General and Deputy Postmaster General, resulting in more difficult bargaining for us. He really emphasized wanting a healthy debate on the issue and wanting people listening to both sides and being educated before making a decision. Next up in the bargaining realm, we have the CCA TE and casual buyback that continues to be a work in progress. Unfortunately, this needs a congressional action before it can ever be formally adopted as part of our bargaining. Typically, this needs congressional action because it does not just affect the Postal Service, but it affects anyone with federal work experience that was not credited to them. I don't know what positions those would be, but they do exist, and thus why congressional action is needed. Arbitration hasn't started yet. Executive Vice President Barner is waiting to hear back from the Postal Service and his counterpart there regarding the scheduling. He sent out a message, but hasn't heard anything back yet. One of the things that makes this round of contract negotiations different is that there's something changing in much of the contract, according to the Executive Vice President. He emphasized all the different roles that people had in submitting potential proposals, said that he had over 200 when bargaining started, when we usually have much, much less. This meshes what I've heard from Executive Vice President at previous WebEx interactions when I was in Region 2. The contract update we've received has been split into two sections. The first section, work rules, are a series of contractual changes that both parties have agreed to and reached a tentative agreement on. When I am referring to work rules, I am not referring to anything particularly economic. I'm not referring to cost of health insurance or how much we can get paid. These changes are interactions with how we do our work or how we grieve when the Postal Service fails to hold up its end of the bargain. It is important to note that while these changes have been tentatively agreed upon, this does not mean they are set in stone. They can still be changed, and unless both sides reach a written agreement where the arbitrator will not look at what they've agreed upon, either side could pull out and ask the arbitrator to look at what they are discussing and have discussed. With this understanding before us, Let us take a closer look at what Executive Vice President Barner spent 45 minutes to an hour discussing and answering questions about concerning the work rules. The first thing he talked about was Article 12. Specifically, that the non-city carrier parts of Article 12 will be removed. Next was Article 17. He highlighted two parts of Article 17 that we'll see our lives as union members changing. Specifically, for presidents, labor management meetings will be required twice a year, unless negotiated otherwise as part of an LMOU. Dues will also be taken care of completely by the NALC due to staffing issues at Egan, as well as delays in processing the enrollment forms. Furthermore, due to local management trying to bar full-time union officials, as well as those who are retired and working with the union from installations, full-time union officials, as well as those retired members who are working with the union, will get postal badges to enter postal facilities. There will also be an electronic grievance system. In theory, everything from submission of information requests up to arbitration would be handled by this system. It will remain in union control. The reason for this was primarily out of information requests to prevent management from claiming that they had never received an information request. Advanced leave will be expanded to include PTFs and, should we have them in the next contract, CCAs. After their first 360-day term, CCAs would be fronted 40 hours of annual leave as part of their next 360-day term. For our career employees, PTFs, they would receive a greater amount of fronted annual leave, to the amount of 80 hours. Finally, for our most senior carriers, if you are maxed on annual leave, you will have the option to sell back annual leave to the Postal Service, up to a certain amount. No specifics were given on this, other than you had to be at your maximum annual leave that you could store. There are additional provisions being added to allow leave for donation of things like stem cells, bone marrow, organs, etc. In Article 2, pregnant women are being added as a protected class. In new positions to be added, you have the traveling technician. This is a position where a carrier will act as a T6, but traveling to multiple stations. So, if you have one station with one extra route and another with four, a traveling T6 would be created between these two stations. I am unsure if this will be between multiple installations, i.e. multiple small towns, or for one installation that has multiple small stations. The next position being created is called ORNA, on the rolls not available. This position would be for those on long-term leave, like OWCP, or who are full-time union officials, such as a full-time president or anyone on the executive board. This would enable more full-time positions to be created. In terms of overtime, the Postal Service estimated that $74 million in overtime grievance payments were paid out in 2023. This is not including other types of grievances, or the cost of the overtime itself. Both sides want to create two new overtime lists. When I am talking about overtime lists, these would be additional overtime lists signed up in the last 2 weeks of a quarter, much in the way that you sign up for the overtime desired list or work assignment lists currently. The first new overtime list are for those people who would only want to work on their not scheduled days. The second new overtime desired list would be those who wanted to work overtime on their regularly scheduled days only. For those concerned about equitability and calculating that at the end of the quarter, equitability would be for each list separately. I have taken this to mean that equitability would be calculated three times. Once for the 12-hour ODL, once for not scheduled ODL, and once for regularly scheduled days only ODL. There will be the option to volunteer to go beyond the absolute limits of 12 and 60, with an automatic 50% premium if people do, and no discipline if they choose not to. We are going to see additional dignity and respect language of some type being added to the contract, but no additional details were released on the exact specifics of that language. They will be attempting to salvage the new route adjustment process. They are going to be putting some guardrails around some provisions to try and prevent ops from creating standards where none exist. This is still in talks, so we will have to wait and see what comes of this. Do not expect provisions within whatever new route adjustment process is salvaged from TIAA to include the ability to grieve what is going on with TIAA on the shop floor. This was specifically noted as something difficult to get them to agree to when you are trying to set up a joint process. In uniform news, they are wanting USPS to create a process where they are the exclusive vendor and they cut out the retail vendors. They will only deal with the suppliers and manufacturers. This is still in talks. They are also addressing problems with the letter carrier paragraph. Drive-out agreements may change, though no specific details were given. Regardless of what happens, whether it be a tentative decision or an arbitration decision, expect this to be a 4-year contract. The following is almost certainly going to go in front of Nolan, assuming a tentative agreement is not reached before then. All of the following are economic issues that the Postal Service and the NALC cannot reach a tentative agreement on as of yet. There will no longer be a two-table system. We will return to a one-table system. There was no note of what that system would look like or which table we would be using, however. The NALC will be attempting to bargain significantly higher starting pay, going for roughly $30 an hour to start. General wage increases would be in the neighborhood of 1.5% to 2% a year. Letter carriers would return to gaining 100% of COLA, or cost of living allowances, across all steps. The Postal Service agrees that letter carriers should make more than clerks. Barner explained that when a contract is negotiated with the NALC, the letter carriers start at a higher place than the clerks do. However, due to the lack of a 100% cost of living allowance, or COLA, across all steps, eventually the starting pay of clerks rises above that of which a starting letter carrier makes. By returning letter carriers to a 100% COLA, this will prevent that from happening in the future. The Postal Service estimates this will cost them, the economic package specifically, $6 billion. Yes, billion. with a B. If this should go in front of Nolan, the NALC will be demanding a return to the all-career model. The NALC is fully prepared to go in front of arbitrator Nolan. They have witnesses who have been preparing for some time, ranging from the common letter carrier all the way up to the executive council. Finally, in passing, Barner did mention an additional step being made at the end of the pay scale. However, he did not mention much about it other than it could potentially exist. Thank you for listening. Hold each other up in these trying times. Our jobs have never been more stressful, more challenging, more dangerous, or more ridiculous than they are right now. The times ahead will be tough, but only together, joined in unity as a union should, will we make it through it.